you think I am, Mr. Falcon?
Okay, welcome back, Mr. Falconers. We got a special episode kind of for us today. At least it's special to me, special to Tom. On our first episode ever, we did a little something called Laundry List. Tom's a busy dad, full-time job, doesn't have a lot of time to watch movies every week, so I attempt to persuade him to use that slot to watch a particular film that I have seen that he has not, and that he's a little on the fence about. So, for the first episode of Mr. Falcon, we took on Rob Zombie's Halloween 2007, precisely because of the reaction that a lot of you just had on hearing that. But, despite how you feel, despite the sayers of nay, I like it. I don't say it's not a great, great film. It's certainly not anywhere near as good as the original, but I would say it's second best. And I've said that before, and you can fight me about it. But my job was just to convince Tom to watch it. I succeeded. He watched it. And now here's what he thought as a first-time viewer of Rob Zombie's remake of Halloween, released in 2007, a remake of the John Carpenter classic Halloween from 1978. And there is also another movie called Halloween from 2018. Nothing to do with this. All right, here we go. Tom got his first laundry list homework assignment. I took about an hour talking him into watching the Rob Zombie remake of Halloween from 2007, right? And he did it. He did so. He took his very limited time in his very busy week as a dad and a full-time employee. And
in my pile of laundry.
Yes, and as he folded his underoos. His Spider-Man underoos.
Those are my kids' underoos.
Okay. Well, at least they're Spider-Man.
They sure are.
He watched a gory, bloody fucking mess at my recommendation. A Halloween movie in the middle of winter. So, what'd you think, man?
Oh, man. What a roller coaster.
Did I steer you wrong?
No. I won't say that. There were some things that on the whole, I liked it. I thought it was interesting. It was a neat take. There were some things that, like, I was just scratching my head, like, why did they do that? And then there were some other things I was like, I get it. That's pretty cool, you know. But on the whole, all things considered, good or bad, I thought it was cool, and I'm glad I saw it.
All right, so not a waste of time. Good.
No,
good,
definitely
good.
Not.
So what were some of the head scratchers?
Okay, so we talked recently about Hannibal Lecter, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things, yeah, so we talked at length about it. And one of the things that I think you had brought up was, like, you know, Hannibal Lecter is such an interesting character. You almost don't want to know that much about him because it, like, kind of detracts from the mystery. And, like, that was kind of one of the things that I found, you know, happening when I was watching this movie, because, you know, I grew up watching Halloween, the original, and, like, you're like, you just don't know what the hell Michael Myers is. You have no idea what he is. He's just this unstoppable killing machine. You don't know why he does it. You don't know who's in the mask until, like, the last frame of the movie. And then you watch this version, and like, even when Michael Myers, like, is big and scary as he is, you know that deep down he's like that, you know, goofy-looking, blonde-haired, you know, pecked-upon boy from the beginning of the movie. And, like, I get giving him a backstory, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's tough to have the backstory, whatever it may be, live up to the explanations you have in your head already. a la Hannibal Lecter, like we were talking about. Now, I don't think, now that story that they gave him wasn't nearly as dumb as what they gave to Hannibal Lecter with his fucking, you know, Nazi hunting, samurai, sword wielding.
Sister soup.
Yeah, it's that sounds insane. But yeah, it made me, like, you can look at the guy in the mask, and I know that deep down underneath the mask, he's like, I see that blonde kid, and it makes it a little harder to be scared of him, you know?
Okay.
And it's,
I mean, do you think
it was still scary though?
Do you think that the fairly brief glimpse into his home life and childhood, do you think his behavior was caused by what we saw, or I mean, I always just took it as would it have been more impactful, do you think, if he had a Leave It to Beaver kind of family?
I don't know. That would be a little more unsettling to me because like before all that stuff happened, right? The movie starts with him wearing that fucking, is that a Captain Howdy mask?
I don't think so.
I mean, it's just the makeup on that clown mask he's wearing looks a lot like Captain Howdy from House of 1,000 Corpses.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you mean Captain Spaulding.
Captain Spaulding. What's Captain Howdy?
Well, Captain Howdy was the Ouija board screen name of the demon in The Exorcist. And it was also it was the AIM screen name of Dee Snider in that movie, Strangeland. Right? Yeah, Strangeland. Yeah. Where he was that dude who would like kidnap people and pierce them and hang them from the, and yeah, that was a 90s shit shingle right there.
It was a thing.
It was a thing.
I'm sorry.
It was a thing. You did this. You took us here.
Captain Spaulding.
Captain Spaulding. I mean, his clown makeup, I mean, it's pretty generic, but I don't know.
It looks like a Captain Spaulding knockoff, which wouldn't surprise me at all for a zombie movie who likes to pepper references all over his stuff, even in his music. But, the movie starts with him in that mask. And I'm sorry, I would never, as a father, let my kid walk around in a mask all day. I mean, maybe just because it was Halloween, they let him have it on. But
I don't know, man.
My kids sat down at the breakfast table and be like, take that off. Come on, what are you doing?
Well, I think he had, it's implied he had a kind of traumatic childhood. His dad's not in the picture. And
right.
The scumbag that his mom is banging is living in the house and she's a stripper. Like, I don't know. I kind of get the feeling they let him get away with quite a bit, which is how he gets so many opportunities to do some animal slaughtering.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like that
the movie starts.
Yeah. It was a gradual progression for him more than it was like a climb and then a snap on Halloween, right?
Right.
In behavior. But I kind of like that it grounded him by giving him common indicators that you see in fledgling serial killers, you know?
Yeah,
makes him, it very, very clearly makes him not supernatural or possessed by a demon or anything, or the spirit of Samhain or anything like that, you know? It really just made it clear that it was just a very bizarre and, I mean, by the book, premature serial killer of
right.
a very no. weirdly detached nature.
You're right. It does ground it in take away any notion that it's like a demon. Yeah. It does that well.
What did you think, considering we're talking about the preamble and pretty much everything zombie added to the story, which is the whole first act?
Yeah.
What did you think of the last scene in the mental hospital? Of young Michael with the nurse.
Oh, with the fork. Ooh.
Yeah. Right before Mama takes herself out of the equation there.
Well, I mean, it was neat because it was definitely a little creepy because she thought she was just safe with him, and clearly she wasn't. But did they give any? I can't remember. Did they give any indication of what made him snap, or did he just decide like, yeah, she's gonna die?
She says something snarky to him when she sits down. It's not something too. I forget exactly what she says, but it's like a little jab at him. And he just goes four corner.
Yeah,
people have pointed out that in the whatever kind of facility that he would have been in, they would not have had forks.
Right. Even they'd have a little plastic spork.
Yeah, even back then they would have. I mean, at the very least, only had plastic spoons. If not sporks. So yeah, I mean, but whatever. I thought that was an awesome scene, and I like the way he filmed it. I like how he slowed it down. I like the reaction when she pulls the mask up and he's got the psycho face.
The amount of
gore they showed. Yeah, but you don't hear it because all you hear is the siren, the klaxon of the psych ward siren blaring. I thought that was very effective.
It was interesting. The way he did it. I mean,
it was neat. And you never hear, like in the original Halloween, you don't really know what happened to the Myers, the parents.
Right. You know? Never call back.
Yeah, they live through the murders. He only kills his sister in the original, and he kills three people instead in this one. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a whole addition to the story. So what about the rest of it? What about the remake part of it when from the escape from the mental institution on?
Well, this is a little off topic, but I do have one question that raised it. This is applies to both of them. In both films, Michael Myers escapes and he at some point gets a hold of a car from the trucker in the remake, and he literally drags the woman out of the car in the original. If Michael Myers has been institutionalized since he was a child, how does he know how to drive a stick?
Yeah, I mean,
can't even drive a stick.
It's even they even address it in the dialogue in the original. They say something to Loomis about it because he talks about how they have to expand their perimeter and whatnot, and they're like, well, he can't drive, and he was driving pretty well last night, you know, and like he doesn't really offer any explanation.
They just write it off.
Yeah, people have thought of that, but I've seen people explain it in that he's over the years at some point he was able to watch. I don't think it's a stick. I don't think it's a stick. I think it's an automatic. It's like a station wagon, isn't it?
Yeah, but what year did that come out? 78? It was
78, I think, yeah. They had plenty of automatics in 78, man.
Did he drive the truck in the remake?
I don't think we ever see him drive in the remake.
You don't. You see him put on the jumpsuit.
I think he just walks, man. I think he walks like Jesus.
Maybe from town to town. But addressing everything from then on, it did make me a little confused. I get that, like the mask, right? Mm. Like, they never explain where the mask comes from in the original, right? Do they?
Yes, they do. In a bit of dialogue, the sheriff, I believe, says something about how someone broke into the hardware store and stole some stuff, and of all things, like a Halloween mask.
Okay, so they do. So he took it. And in the new one, they make a big deal of showing him, like, he when they go in his cell's fucking creepy. It's just covered in those newspaper masks, and the one guy is like,
paper mache masks, yeah.
Yeah, and he takes great care. They show him taking great care to make a new one. And I guess it just struck me as odd that, like, he wanted so bad to get back to the original one, which he, you know, the only attachment he really had to it was that, like, he popped it on to kill his family real quick, you know, and hit it. Mm. I don't know. It seemed odd to me that he would go through all the trouble to make these masks, but then he doesn't make one when he gets out. He just finds the old one, you know?
So, like, They show he has a proclivity for wearing masks before the murders with the clown mask thing. Like, he finds some kind of safety in it, right?
You know, yeah, he won't take it off when he's at the institution.
Yeah, yeah, it gets worse and worse the longer he's in the institution. He starts making them almost as soon as he's in there. I think he says something about it hides his ugliness. Like, the kid's got psychological problems.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big part of it. I always just assumed that, I mean, he gets the mask off his sister's boyfriend who brings it into the house. So I just assumed that he wore it because it was there, and then he tied it to his first real, like, to murdering his sister, which, you know, may have had some sexual overtones for him. Like, you know, I don't know. It was memorable. It was his first, like, slaying.
Yeah, you could say that.
You know, it was the break in his psychosis, really. So, I don't know. I always just assumed it was the act that tied him to the mask rather than the mask being something special.
Right.
Or maybe he liked the fact that it looked human but was blank, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe there was just something about it. And, I mean, he was just bored, and he just made a whole bunch of different colored masks while he was in the nut hatch.
That's certainly possible.
Plus, it looked cool. Like you said, it looked creepy. It gave Zombie an opportunity to, like, cover Tyler Mane's mug in a couple different ways before he sets off, you know, to Haddonfield. I did like the fight with Joe Grizzly Bitch in the truck stop. That was pretty cool. I always liked
that. Was funny. Yeah, he stands up. He's just like, you better back off right now. He's got that Elkhorn knife in his belt.
Yeah, man. And that fight, the way that was filmed felt really real. You know, the violence and the camera movements along with the stall wall crashing down and everything. Like, the violence felt really, throughout the movie, I think I said this before, the violence just felt very visceral and real to me.
You know what I appreciated about that fight? There's like a stupid trope. A friend of ours used to joke around about this. Ken used to joke about it. He used to say, like, oh, there's the disarmament rule of threes. Whenever you're trying to knock a weapon out of someone's hand, you just pop it three times and it pops out. You're like,
third time's a charm.
And it comes out on the third. Now, not him. He had to whack his arm against the thing
like
18 times.
Like, 8 times. I always noticed that, and I always appreciated it too. And it
makes it feel real.
He was hitting hard, man. Like, and he had control of him. He had him in that hole. He didn't let him go. So why not just keep doing it until he drops the fucking thing? No, that was pretty neat. I like that. And it also solved the technical problem of how does a guy Tyler Mane's size find coveralls?
You find a big dude.
You find a big motherfucker named Joe Grizzly.
Yeah.
With fucking sideburns from the 70s.
Oh, that hair was incredible.
It was beautiful. Oh, when he looks at himself in the mirror, I love that shit. I love that whole sequence. That's great. All right, so I had a bone to pick with the movie, and I warned you about this before we got into it. What did you think of Loomis?
Okay.
Miss Loomis.
I didn't mind Loomis's character. And, like, there were things I liked. Number one, the hair is awful. That hair they gave him to look
younger. The hair is awful, yeah.
It's awful.
The beard is awful. What the fuck is with the little, like, his chin, his little baboon bald. Ass on his chin is bald. Who the fuck shaves just that? It's like a reverse soul patch or something.
I don't think
it doesn't grow that way? You think it just grows?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Well, I have to look at other films where he has a fucking beard because that guy's been in everything. What is it? Is it fucking Malcolm McDowell, yeah?
Malcolm McDowell.
Clockwork Orange, freaking okay.
But the way they did Loomis, like, it's one of the things, the first time we talked about Halloween, the Loomis from the original, he's just like, no, I don't want him to ever get out. He's pure evil. Like, that always struck me as odd. Like, most doctors would make some kind of an attempt to understand a patient, to try to help them. He's like, no, I have no interest in helping him. He's pure evil. I hope he never gets out. And, you know...
Yeah, and we argued this last time, and I said, Loomis had given him like what 15 years of trying and he was done, but
yeah. Okay. And finally he's just like, you know, I'm sorry. This is our last conversation. And they show you the relationship that between them when he's like talking to him through the years. It seems like a real doctor patient relationship, particularly when he's a child. And then when he gets out, he finds him, you know, and he goes and he buys his big fucking gun like he does in the, like he has in the first one. But he straight up like stops him. He's like, I failed you. I'm sorry. You know, he's trying to like apologize to him. And I thought,
that's true. That was a good moment.
I was like, that sounds about right. If you had this patient that you did your damnedest to help, and then somehow they got out and went on a murder fest, you know, yeah, I might think the same thing. Like, where did I go wrong? I couldn't help you.
I just think McDowell's performance was like a little uneven, because I do like that moment, but I kind of always felt that moment was incongruous with the rest of that Loomis's characterization. I don't know. He just seemed a little too over the top and goofy for me. Morally, he's questionable. I mean, you know, he thinks he failed Michael and he did all this, you know, and he obviously thinks Michael is evil because he goes and gets the fucking gun and knows he probably has to be put down. But he still wrote a book about it, and apparently goes on speaking tours.
Yeah, I understand
stumping for
that.
His book. Like, he's kind of a shitbag. You know, I don't really know why that layer had to be put on him.
If you took out the book,
yeah,
the thing with the book, he wouldn't be a shitbag.
Yeah, I think that would have helped a lot. And there's also a deleted scene where Ron Howard's brother is one of the hospital administrators, and he gives them a lot of shit for letting him out, like risking transferring him and all this other stuff. So that makes that plot point a little clearer, but it was too much. I mean, it was already it's already long. So what about the stalking? What about the you know, the babysitter murders, which is, you know, the crux of the whole thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little confused about, well, yeah, the one scenario is like almost like shot for shot, like from the first movie, you know, where with the girl in the abandoned house. That's just number one. I thought it was kind of funny that they had two very attractive young women in both Michael Myers was a kid and when he was an adult and when he was Tyler Mane. And they're both like trying to like just get down with these goofy looking dudes. I'm sorry. the dude he hits with the bat in the beginning is one of the He is hard to look at.
He reminds me of Seth Green when he was young, from like Clueless, wasn't he? Yeah, he was a skateboard kid in Clueless, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he looks that's what he reminds me of.
He looks like the crazy third Culkin brother.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
There's
so what, you didn't
third
like,
Culkin brother.
You didn't like what's her name's boyfriend with the glasses?
I mean, I barely saw him, but yeah, he looked like a real goofball. I mean, he was barely in the movie. He got killed pretty quick. But in any case, yeah, like those bits were interesting. They recreated a lot from the original. Like when he staples the guy to the wall. You know, that's like such a crazy scene from the first one, and they were trying to do it justice in the second one. And then Tyler Mane like going around being like a murder machine was pretty there were bits of it that were just like brutal.
It's pretty scary, right? A dude that size coming after you.
Yeah.
That kind of determination and fucking strength. It's a little scary.
And you know what's funny? There was like one little thing that took me. It's so small. It was a little thing that kind of took me out of it. When they show him like up close, you can see his eyes in the mask.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of fans of the original bring that up. They don't like that.
Yeah, it wasn't my favorite.
It didn't really bother me. Like, I kind of thought, you would, right? You would see them if the light shines, right?
You would, but I have the original to put it up against is like, in that one, you don't. You never see his eyes. And like, that's part of like, that's what's so unnerving about it. It's like, Jesus Christ, it's creepy. And then when you can see his eyes, it's just like, every time I saw them, it was like a reminder that like, yes, there's a man under there, and that man used to be a goofy little blonde boy, you know, that would, you know.
Do you think it would have helped if the kid had been cast differently, if the young Michael Myers had been cast differently?
Maybe, but, like, I don't, I think that was intentional. It was kind of to show that, like, you never know what kid is going to snap, and, you know, they don't have to look like a monster to be one. I understand that, but, you know, the fact that it's a horror movie, made in Hollywood, you're kind of expecting it to be scary. Those things don't always gel with reality. Remember we've talked about this movie before. Remember 8mm?
Sure.
And
sure.
Then there's what fantastic. Was the guy from the video, the machine. And
yeah,
unmasks him, and it's just that dude. Who's in stuff.
Yeah, that dude, that character actor who's in stuff. He was the pederast in Devil's Advocate, in the beginning of Devil's Advocate. That's the first thing I ever saw him in.
I saw him in
The
Wire.
But the guy has never... Yeah, the guy has never had hair. Yeah, he's never had hair. He was in The Wire. He was in... he's on that show, For All Mankind, on Apple.
He was
Apple,
in True Blood.
Yeah, right. He was in True Blood. He was in... he's been in a lot of stuff. He was in that HBO show about New York and the... 70s and the porn industry was at the Deuce. Yeah, Deuce on Second Avenue. He was big character in that. And yeah, he's been in all kinds of shit, that guy. But yeah, he's a very plain looking white dude.
Yeah, he says it. And he's like, they're in the rain. He's just like, were you expecting some kind of monster? And I'm sitting there thinking, like, yeah. You know, yeah. You're like a snuff film actor. Of course, you're supposed to be grotesque under there, you know? But he's not.
But also, like, I don't know. I kind of like that you could see his eyes a little bit, because it reminds you that, yeah, it is a person doing these horrible things and not some kind of machine. And that's a little unnerving on some level.
You could go either way with it. Yeah.
So they added some victims during his spree for this film. First, he kills Laurie's parents, the Strodes, her adopted parents.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. That's a pretty brutal scene. It's essentially a home invasion. It's pretty rough.
Yeah, he slides right by the dad and just, like, chops his throat real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, was it D. Wallace. We were talking about D. Snyder earlier. D. Wallace is the mom. She's Mrs.
Strode.
Oh, the
one from Cucho?
Yeah, that's her. That's her. Horror vet.
We watched that not that long ago, and every time, right. Like, oh, man, D. Wallace is in trouble.
Oh, man. D's gonna get it.
D. Wallace. Yeah.
She ends up getting her head snapped back by Michael Myers. I always thought that was a pretty brutal thing to add.
It was. Because she's trying to call Laurie, too.
Yeah.
Like
it's unnerving.
She's not trying to save herself. She's trying to get a hold of, like, she sees that he's after Laurie, and she smashes the picture out of his hand.
Yeah.
You know, that parent instinct kicks in, like, you're not gonna get her.
And it's not a slow, it's not a quick affair. It's a pretty drawn-out scene. And also, he kills Annie's boyfriend, mid-coitus.
Yeah.
Mid-coitus. Drag his ass off her. That's pretty brutal.
And
the fact
brutal.
That he left Annie screaming is like bait. I don't know. I like that, man, because it really let you know that he's intelligent. You know, that there's a mechanic to his scheming. You know, he's not animalistic. He basically laid a trap for her.
Yeah, that was some diabolical Laurie. Shit.
Yeah, man. I don't know. So overall, like, it's worth a watch. How does
Definitely.
It measure up to the original? Do you think it's like a fairly decent remake for updating it to when it was made? I mean, it's pretty old at this point, too.
Yeah, you know, I liked it. And if I'm ranking them, it's better than the sequels, you know?
Okay, yeah.
It's better.
All of them?
And, like, I think it's better than the 2018 one.
Okay.
It's, yeah, I'd put it up there. I don't think it's as good as the original. And I don't think that was ever the argument, but
no.
It's an interesting update, you know, because, like we were saying before, 1978, the original comes out. That's not us, man. Like, we grew up with that, with stuff that was more over the top than that. And this movie, I think, was made for people like us that grew up with it and was like, well, let's, we have to up the ante. And they really do, you know. There's just, there's some zombie hallmarks in there. Some work, some don't. They made some choices. Some work, some don't. But yeah, at the end of it, I mean, I think they made a lot of choices that they had to bring it into the modern era at the time.
It would have been a lot better if the first scene wasn't so zombie dialogue-y.
Oh, yeah, it was, that was brutal to get through.
I warned you about that, and you had to get through it, but yeah, it's...
You also did tell me that, like, Will Forsythe somehow is able to, like, sell that with a straight face. He's right? Such a turd.
He's such a slime ball, man. Nobody plays a slime ball like him. Yeah, he's incredible.
He's spitting his eggs all over the place. Yeah.
Looks like he hasn't showered in, like, a month.
Yeah, he's, and, like, he's I've so seen him gross.
You ever see him in interviews and shit? He's so soft-spoken and just, like, a gentle, smiling dude, you know, and he always plays a scumbag. He was great in Boardwalk Empire.
He was fantastic in that. Oh, yeah, he played Manny Horvitz, Manny Horvitz, the butcher.
Manny Horvitz, yeah. The son of a bitch killed Jimmy. That bastard.
He was gross.
That was a great show. Underrated show. Excellent
show. That
show's
incredible. I have some questions.
Excellent show. Yeah, let's go.
All right, here's a question. Like, in the original, it was very clear that Michael Myers was trying to kill Laurie Strode, right?
Yeah.
In this movie, he literally, like, he picks her up, and he carries her to the old house, right?
Right.
He's got the girl posed under the gravestone that he stole. And he drops her there, and they make a big deal about him being affectionate towards his sister. He's the only one that he shows affection to two people, his mom and his little sister. So would he have hurt her? Because he shows her the picture, and she doesn't know what that is. She doesn't know that's her. So she's like, she just sees the knife, sees an opportunity to get the fuck out, and she stabs him. But if like she didn't do anything, would he have hurt her?
I don't know. I mean, he is pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, he is so crazy.
I think it's kind of, it might be just kind of his opportunity of like seeing if she would come along with him. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, who knows what he was even looking for?
Because if the goal was to kill her, like he had her dead to rights, why carry her back to that house and why show her that picture if he doesn't want something else?
You have to remember too, the in the original Halloween, Carpenter hadn't written in that they were brother and sister. Like Laurie Strode was just some girl in the original film. He didn't add that until Halloween 2. And he always said he regretted it. Like he didn't necessarily like he was forced to make a sequel pretty much. And that was something that got added in to make it, give it some kind of plot.
I didn't know that.
But since that was all canon, and since Zombie decided he wanted to tell Michael's story, you know, he had to decide whether he was going to use it or not, and he ended up including it. So, I mean, you know, is Michael going back to Haddonfield to recreate his night, his murder night, but, you know, jacked up to adult level, partly? You know, is he also going, I mean, in all tied up in that, you could look at it like killing his sister is almost part of his ritual at this point.
Yeah.
And
that one girl's another sister for his sister.
Yeah. They look the actresses they cast look very, very similar. They did a great job, especially the way they, you know, made them up for the film. That was always impressive to me. You know, I remember I had to check originally. I thought it might've been the same girl. In makeup, but it was not. You know, Hannah Hall played Judith Myers, right. And Scout Taylor Compton played Laurie. And Laurie, again, like the original Scout, was a teenager when they filmed this movie. The other girls weren't. I mean, Danielle Harris plays Annie, and she was 27.
Oh, geez.
When they filmed this, but she looked very young. But she was in Halloween 4 and 5.
Yeah, the little girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was really a cool thing. But I don't know where I was going with that. But, yeah, it's neat that she was young and she was of the age. And, you know, the sister, what do you say about it? I mean, he waited till his sister was the same age as his first sister was when he killed her. Is right. How I always looked at it for this one. And it provides a reason, too, for why he picked that Halloween of all Halloweens to break out. You know, in the original, you can think that he snacked out of his semi-comatose state for whatever reason that year on the anniversary. But in Zombie's version, he actually has, it's actually been a countdown. And it was just fortuitous that he was being transferred at that time. And he took advantage of it, I guess. The escape scene was pretty cool. Danny Trejo.
That was pretty grody.
Danny Trejo.
I felt bad when they killed him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they made a point of like showing you that he was good to him. And he even says, he's
always
like,
good to you,
I
Mikey.
I was always good to you, yeah.
It's fucking hardcore, man.
He
it makes
scolds
you know,
that
it,
other guy.
Yeah.
Don't touch his things.
Well, that other guy in the director's cut that I told you not to watch, that other guy is the one who ends up raping a female patient in Michael's room.
Oh boy!
And that's what allows him to begin his escape. And essentially, he slaughters everyone in the fucking hospital who isn't locked behind a door.
Right.
So that also contributes to his the big body count Myers has in this one compared to the original. Is a lot of the people he killed in the hospital, not and off screen, too.
Right.
Yeah, because he didn't find a bunch of bodies. This is a whole, Danny Trejo found a whole bunch of goddamn bodies.
Yeah, the escape scene was pretty gnarly. And, like, he just pops out of the chains. And, like, normally
damn,
I'd say, yeah, bullshit. But, like, Tyler Mane, he is a big boy.
He's a big dude. And the way he filmed him made him look even bigger. Like, he is terrified. Like, remember I told you when he looks through the transom?
The transom, yeah.
Door and he's just like right there. That scared the shit out of me. I'm like, ooh, that's a little poopy in the pants right there. That's freaky. Because you don't feel like you can fight him, man. You know? Like, you feel like if you had a pipe, you could like at least be okay against the original Michael Myers. You know, you could fuck him up a little bit. And fucking Tyler Mane just pick you up with one arm and staple you to a wall.
Yeah.
That's a lot of it. How about the ending? What did you think of the ending?
I was just going to say, my favorite part of that movie was the very last scene.
Oh, well, that's a big deal. That's what it leaves you with, right?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it was funny because, like, leading up to that, there's that scene where he's got her trapped in the attic, and he's bopping through the ceiling with the big 2x4. And, like,
yeah.
That was a little scary, but I was like, all right, he's still bopping the ceiling. He's bopping the ceiling. He just kept it. Went on way too long. So then, like, you know, she gets out. They fall out the window, and she's just like trying to pull the trigger, and then just like I don't know quite how the bullet that was left in the gun got advanced enough in the gun that like she had to come back around to it. It doesn't make sense, but. I get it. Built tension. That gun goes off. She gets sprayed with blood and just starts screaming. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'm into it. It just was like shades of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah,
you know.
And
I mean,
it just
it
cuts
wasn't
to the theme too.
Wasn't the killer screaming at the end of that? It was her.
Yeah.
And yeah, just boom credits. I don't know. I dug that. I thought that was a cool way to go out.
Yeah, that and the fact that part of that takes place in that empty swimming pool, I thought was a nice touch because that was really scary to be cornered.
Oh yeah, trapped like a rat.
Pool like that was pretty fucking creepy all by itself and very suburban, like a very very suburban thing that could happen in any neighborhood.
Yeah, and she just kind of wanders into it by accident.
It's a great ending. It's a great ending. It's really hard. I mean, I think that was one of the weakest parts of the original is the ending. I never liked that they look back at the grass and he's just gone. You know?
Yeah.
It helps with sequels, but I don't know why Carpenter chose to do that if he wasn't intending for Michael to stay alive and for there to be more. I guess just to scare the audience, he could still be out there, maybe.
But yeah, yeah.
To me, it just kind of, it seemed, I don't know, it seemed like a poor capper to such a good movie. And at least this had a definitive ending, which we won't talk about it because we don't have to watch the sequel that Zombie made, but Zombie ended up walking it back because Michael had to survive because they wanted a sequel, just like Carpenter. And he made a sequel with a horse, and it's a weird movie.
The ending, if you pretend that that second one doesn't exist, that was the way to go out, you know? And like, what a bold choice to go with just close up on a single actress just screaming her brains out, covered in blood.
Yeah.
It's just such a shocking image and like the thing with the revolver, an abrupt end.
The thing with the revolver bothers me too. But I mean, the way I just kind of rationalize it in my head is she was, there was a lot of struggling going on with that gun, and she had been like falling through floors and crawling through walls and shit. It's possible the cylinder was released and it was able to spin. I don't know. It's unlikely. Maybe Loomis did it before he got his head crushed. I don't know how that happened. It shouldn't have worked that way.
You know what's funny too? Like I forgot about that. Loomis gets his head crushed. It's very shades of like Blade Runner. When Roy crushes Tyrell's head, meeting him,
okay.
You know, and I know Zombie's a big Blade Runner fan. He references it all the time in his like a lot of his songs.
I
thought that was a
fit into it.
Intentional nod.
He unkills him for the sequel too.
Wait, Loomis is alive?
He's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. He's just fine. It's the weirdest fucking thing, dude. The sequel is so terrible.
I'm gonna choose to believe that sequel never happened, and we're just we're gonna go with this one because
the first 20 minutes are cool. The first 20 minutes of sequel are cool, and if you're a fan of Carpenter's Halloween 2, that's worth a look. But the rest of it is just dog shit, and I think Zombie knew it was dog shit, and he didn't want to make it because that story was meant to end. He ended it. It was good.
Yeah, was a good ending.
All right, so the first laundry list recommendation from our first episode was a success. I think we call that a success, huh?
Shit, yeah. Thanks for the suggestion.
Oh, you're welcome, man. That just means you believe in me, so you'll listen to me more, maybe a little.
Yeah, man. Possibly. You've built some goodwill.
Trust. It's about trust. All right, so I'll have to comb my annals of films and find something you haven't seen before, something to convince you of. We'll find something good. I'll try not to steer you wrong again. You said you're gonna watch a movie that I recommended anyway. Angel Heart, right?
Yeah, that's on the list.
All right, good. I didn't have to talk you into that when you're just watching it on your own.
Shit, yeah. To do, man.
Are you a Mickey Rourke fan?
No. I mean, I don't dislike Mickey Rourke.
You haven't seen much
Rourke.
Of his stuff?
No, not really. I mean, like, I only kind of learned about Mickey Rourke after he went through his transformation, you know? I think my first experience with Mickey Rourke was, like, Sin City.
Okay. And did you see The Wrestler?
No, I didn't. I heard it was great.
Oh. Yeah, that was a good one. It was a sad one. It was a good one. Yeah, if you ever get the chance, it's worth a watch. It's whether you care about wrestling or not. It's more of a has-been, over-the-hill kind of story. It's very
relatable. I'll watch that. It looked great.
Yeah, but Angel Heart's from when he was still pretty. When he was still a pretty man before his face got all smashed up. I just watched Pope of Greenwich Village not too long ago, which is another one of his bigger ones.
You are a Mickey Rourke fan.
I've seen a lot of his movies. I don't know if I'm a fan. He's done a lot of dog shit. even when he was younger, before he became a boxer and got his face all smashed up and then get all the plastic surgery. I saw 9.5 weeks when I was younger because, I mean, there are a lot of boobs in it.
So I remember passing that in the video store a lot, and I was like, yeah. Oh, my, Angie Everhart.
Very sultry.
I never
I think Angie Everhart was in the second one. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was
9.5 more weeks.
I think it was 9. Yeah, I think that's what it was. No, I think it's another 9.5 weeks. I think it is. I swear to God.
18.5 weeks. 18.
I think it was a young Kim Basinger in the original, and Mickey Rourke. But Mickey was in the second one with Angie.
You want to hear something kind of funny?
His career's a weird one. Go.
There's another one. It's called Plot Words. It's like Plot a stupid words. Online game. The website spits out a word to do with the plot of a movie, and they get more and more specific, and then you have to guess what movie it is. And sometimes it's hard, and it's spitting out like bar, fighter, heist, or robbery, all these things. And I'm like, well, I have no clue what this movie is. I use all my hints. At the end, it's some movie called Barfly. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
Barfly. I've never heard of Barfly. And I look it up. It's like Mickey Rourke. Who the hell's seen this movie or something? And what do I see in the movie section? I was like, God damn it. He's got Barfly. Of course he's got Barfly.
Right.
No one's ever seen this movie. Sure you've seen it. You know?
Faye Dunaway. Yeah.
I just thought that was funny.
My wife and I are huge Charles Bukowski fans. And we saw Factotum a long time ago, the Matt Dillon one, which is based on Bukowski's novel of the same name. And, you know, I went on a hunt and I'm like, holy fuck, Mickey Rourke played Bukowski in this fucking Barfly movie. Are you serious? And the only way I could find it was on I bought a DVD online that was like a Greek import. And it was a terrible transfer from like a VHS, I think. And the only available subtitles were in Greek. But it was the movie and I couldn't find it anywhere else. And I had it for a long time. And now I think they put it on Blu-ray since. I should buy it, but I haven't. But it's a great little Frank Stallone is in that movie, dude. Fucking Frank Stallone.
Word?
Yeah, he's a bartender. He's the douchebag bartender. So, just that alone. He does not sing, unfortunately. There is no burning trash barrels. He does not sing. But he does punch Mickey Rourke in the face a bunch of times. Take it back. Well, I've been told by. All right, cool, man. All right, so enjoy Angel Heart, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I didn't steer you wrong. I'll think of something else to talk you into.